to another edition of Israel Uncensored on the landofisrael.com radio network. My name is Josh Haston. It is June the 20th, 2016. Hope you are well in your part of the world. Don't forget, you can always join the conversation. Get in touch with me via email, josh@thelandofisrael.com, on Twitter @JewofZion, and on Facebook. I am here today in Gush Etzion from what is called The Hub. It is a brand new startup business center where people from all over come together and interact. Israel, the startup nation, that's what this place is all about. It's here in the Gush Etzion Industrial Zone. I'm staring out the window of The Hub, the beautiful views of the Judean Mountains. Definitely inspiring. You should see it for yourself. Anyway, again, hope all is well. We are going to get to some news today. If you missed last week's show, you can go back online, thelandofisrael.com, and check out last week's show or all the great shows, both here on Israel Uncensored or the shows hosted by my friends and colleagues, Eve Harrow, Yishai Fleischer, and of course, Ari and Jeremy. Anyway, we're going to start today's program talking about arguably the greatest Jewish philanthropist in our time who has passed away. Dr. Irving Yitzchak Moskowitz, may he rest in peace. Truly a wonderful, wonderful man and a great, great Jew, a proud Jew who did so much for the land of Israel and the Jewish people, both in Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria and everywhere, really. People don't realize the contributions he made in places like Sderot, where he built one of the, or dedicated one of the Hesder dormitories, the rocket-proof dormitory in Sderot. So many projects, lone soldiers he was involved with, so many different projects. It's truly a loss for the Jewish people all over the world, and especially here in the land of Israel. One of the most moving tributes I saw posted over the last 48 hours since we found out about his passing was written by Michael Luria from the Ateret Kohanim organization. And I want to share with you some of Michael's thoughts. I apologize. It's actually Daniel Luria, the Michael's his brother, also a good friend, Daniel Luria from Ateret Kohanim, a tribute to Irving Moskowitz. He calls him a true builder of united Jerusalem in our times. Daniel says the following: a crown has fallen from our heads. These words were said when the great Hasidic leader Menachem Mendel from Vitsk passed away in Tveria in 1788. And I say these words today with the passing to the next world of Irving Moskowitz. There are many Jews who know from where they came. They have history, heritage, and roots. But they may not have a sense of the now, of the greatness of the hour for the Jewish people. Irving Moskowitz had both. He knew from where he came. He knew where he was going. He felt the energy of the returning and emerging Jewish people in her homeland, and he felt as one with both the land and her people. His unique blend of Jewish pride, emunah, faith, passion, drive, dedication, chesed, and huge generosity made him stand alone. On the highest Jewish pedestal in both Israel and abroad, he stood side by side, shoulder to shoulder, and heart to heart with Am Yisrael at every step in this unfolding redemption process. He redeemed and reclaimed Jerusalem for the Jewish people and has thus ensured that united Jerusalem stays in Jewish hands for generations. He has been at the pioneering forefront of the unfolding realization of the redemption process and the Zionist dream in Jerusalem, a modest and humble man of peace who believed that Jews had the natural, moral, and historical right to buy and live in any neighborhood of Jerusalem. And it goes on and continues this very moving tribute, again, to one of the greats, one of the greatest philanthropists, probably, I said in our time before, maybe in the history of the Jewish people, Dr. Irving Moskowitz. May he rest in peace. One last thought here from Daniel Luria. If the stones of Jerusalem could speak, they would say Toda Rabah, or thank you, Dr. Moskowitz. They would speak of being dusty, dirty, and lonely for 2,000 years, until Irving, Zichrono Livracha, blessed memory, and Cherna, his wife, came and walked the alleyways of Jerusalem. If the stones of Jerusalem could speak, they would say, we mourn for the master builder and the craftsman of Jerusalem. Very moving. And I know his wife, Cherna, and their entire family and the Moskowitz Foundation will continue in his legacy, carrying on the tradition of bettering lives for Jews, bettering lives for the people of Israel. And from what I understand, he'll be laid to rest on Har Zeitim, the Mount of Olives, sometime here on Monday in Jerusalem. Switching gears here from a hero of the Jewish people to our enemies. And we'll talk about some of the things in the news right now. Yisrael Hayom reports that the parents of a Palestinian terrorist, Mohammed Halabi, who murdered Rabbis Nechemia Lavi and Aaron Bennett in Jerusalem's Old City last October, decided to carry out a provocation in the same spot. They went back to where this terrorist murdered Jews on Haggai Street in the Old City, and the mother of this terrorist was photographed making a V sign, victory sign, proud of her son, the jihadist, for murdering two Jews. This was just another effort, says Yisrael Hayom, to glorify Halabi. He was killed by security forces at the scene. He was also honored, by the way, by Al-Quds University under the Palestinian Authority. He was in a recent event there. He was praised by the speakers, and his parents were given his diploma. So these are our peace partners. These are our peace partners in action. This is what they believe. The parents, and we'll talk more about lone wolves or the myth behind the lone wolves a little bit later on. But what are we going to do about this? What are we going to do to deter the terrorists from carrying out the act? And I think the perfect example would be to deport the parents. The parents who we see from this example here, showing the V sign, there's a picture in Australium, supporting their son as a martyr in their belief. These people need to be deported. That would be a deterrent, one of the many deterrents which could be taken to deter, to discourage these terrorists from continuing to carry out these acts, which still continue. The knife attacks are down. Car rammings are down. We saw the massacre in Tel Aviv just a week and a half ago or so. But don't think by any stretch of the imagination that the violence is gone away. It's here. It's still going on. This past Saturday night, just an example, an M16 found in a car driven by three Arabs near the Tapuch Junction. Imagine what would happen if the border police didn't catch them. 20 firebombs thrown at the community of Psagot. It's north of Jerusalem. A young boy taken to the hospital who was hit and wounded lightly, thank God lightly, in a rock attack. That's all just from this past Saturday night. Amongst other attacks, there were several others in the Gush. There was another rock throwing near the Male Amos Junction and then near Beit Jala. So this stuff is going on. We saw on Friday a home in Jerusalem's Armon HaNatziv neighborhood struck by four firebombs reported by the Jerusalem Post, thrown by Arab suspects who were from Palestinian Authority-controlled territory illegally in Jerusalem. They were caught, apprehended by the border police. This is the reality going on. And if you saw Michael Freund's op-ed in the Jerusalem Post this past Thursday, and I thank him for writing it and for talking about how these rock attacks, and according to Hatzalah Yehuda v'Shomron, 10 to 15 of these attacks take place on a daily basis, reported attacks, rocks and firebombs, etc. Who knows how many unreported attacks actually take place. It's important to point this out and get the information out there because people don't know. And it's really not their fault they don't know because it's not being covered in the mainstream media and the main news sources. You're getting it from various other sources, but it's a reality and it's not being covered. Of course, I've shared with you several times where I've had to encounter these rock incidents. And we're not going to get into that right now. I don't want to rehash or relive those at this point, but it is a reality. And I'm thankful for those who are willing to expose and get these get the word of these attacks out there so people know this is a daily threat and the terrorists are still there. The jihadists are still trying to murder us. If you're just joining me, my name is Josh Hasten. This is Israel Uncensored on the landofisrael.com radio network. Thanks so much for joining us here on this Monday, the 20th of June, 2016. Or maybe you're listening on demand. Maybe it's a few days later. Anyway, hope you're enjoying the show. Today we are talking news. We're going to bring all the latest from Israel to you, wherever you are out in radio land. A little bit of politics right now. A lot of ex-heads of the IDF and politicians are turning their focus, their target on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, everything right now in terms of the coalition looks stable. And pundits are saying that most likely Netanyahu will be the prime minister for another 2 years. I don't know if that's the case. You never know here in Israel. You never know when some coalition crisis could happen and we could go to new elections. But for now, at least, things look like they're pretty stable. Yet you have over the weekend, Bugi Yaalon, who was just now our defense minister, Moshe Yaalon, coming out saying he's going to lead a new party. He wants to be the prime minister, former prime minister Ehud Barak, also bashing the government as it is. Will he return to politics, perhaps, with Yaalon and with several others? Ashkenazi, Gabi Ashkenazi, former chief of staff of the IDF and others. That remains to be seen. Ehud Barak denying to Gil Hoffman, or at least the Gil Hoffman reports from the Jerusalem Post. I think this was actually said to Gil himself, colleague of ours as well, that Ehud Barak says he's not returning to politics right now. But again, he mentions here, does Gil, that on Thursday night, he called for the public to unite to defeat Netanyahu in a fiery address to the Herzliya conference. So people are calling for Netanyahu's head. You have Jonathan Tobin here from Commentary Magazine asking, has Netanyahu met his match? He wrote this the other day. He says, throughout the 7+ years since his return to the PM's office, Netanyahu's Israeli and American critics have longed for a credible challenger who could beat him, to no avail. But this week, he calls it the hashtag NeverBibi crowd. I think that was used during the last election. It consists of a broad range of Netanyahu critics are calling Moshe Yaalon perhaps the new white knight. Again, we just talked about how he was the minister of defense and then he was taken away from that position. He quit. Some say fired. Depends on how you look at it. Tobin says, in theory, a new political force led by Yaalon and peopled by popular former members of Netanyahu's party would be perfectly positioned to steal crucial Likud votes and change Israel's political landscape. But the problem, says Tobin, with the NeverBibi dream team is that Yaalon is probably never going to be as popular in the future as he is now. It's all about timing, is what he's saying. Another problem is that Yaalon's critique of Netanyahu contradicts everything he did in office as defense minister. Again, it's, you know, this is politics. I just started watching House of Cards, the Netflix series, if you will, fictional series about how politicians, in this case in the United States, operate. I mean, this is real life politics here. Just several weeks ago, Yaalon is talking about how, you know, the government is in the right, is headed in the right direction. The prime minister is headed in the right directions, etc. And now you have him changing, doing an about face because he left the government. And now he's criticizing Netanyahu. Now he's accusing Netanyahu of using scare tactics in regards to the Iranians, saying that's not the real threat, etc. It's not an existential threat to the state of Israel. So we'll have to see how this plays out. But it's amazing how people can just change, flip-flop like that. Tobin goes on to say Israeli voters are bound to get sick of the prime minister eventually. If he runs for a fourth consecutive term, his fifth overall, they might that really might be a bridge too far, meaning Yaalon may have a chance. But Tobin concludes saying it's not likely, as I said before, that elections are going to take place for another 2 years. Those who assume that the NeverBibi dream team will knock off Netanyahu should be wary of underestimating the man who is without question the most formidable politician in this country's history. Whether you like Bibi Netanyahu or don't like him, I definitely would agree with Tobin that the guy is a master politician, and he may, in just another year and a half or so, pass David Ben-Gurion as the longest prime minister in our state's history. We'll see how it all plays out. Nevertheless, here we have another perhaps irrelevant or wannabe prime ministerial candidate here, MK Tzipi Livni. Let's remind people she is an MK of the Zionist Union, etc., but she had higher ranking positions, is my point. But she's calling for a national referendum to determine the Arab-Israeli conflict and how Israel should go about negotiating, etc. The problem, she calls it, looming over the state of Israel for nearly 50 years. So let's analyze what she's saying. She's actually talking about Israel's control of Judea and Samaria and at times Gaza, etc. She's calling it the problem, the 50-year-old problem. I think it's the 50-year-old success of the state of Israel, liberation of our lands, which are seized illegally by foreign entities for the last couple thousand years, including most recently the illegal Jordanian occupation. But this is what she's all about these days, is blaming what she calls the settlers for everything. The people in Judea and Samaria are at fault for all of Israel's woes. She says the following, quote, "We need to know," this is by the way in the J Post, "we need to know in which direction we're going. Two countries or one. Without solving this problem, Israel will not be able to redeem itself as a Jewish and democratic nation." Livni, speaking at an event at Rishon LeZion, said that the settler minority is taking control over the majority in Israel, influencing the behavior of leaders and shaping government policies and decisions. Number one, again, scare tactics here, that Israel will stop being a democratic nation if we don't create two-state solutions here, using the demographic thing. And then saying how that the settlers have taken over control. We don't even have cell phone reception out here in places in Judea and Samaria. We're the ones who are in control. We're lucky to get radio and cell phone. We're lucky if people are willing to come out and visit us. And we're the ones in charge. And this is really what gets me. She said the following, quote, "They must be stopped. There is a strong cry here from people who see what is happening to our beloved country, disintegrating with the loss of its democratic values." She's essentially comparing the so-called settlers, residents of Judea and Samaria, to ISIS. They must be stopped. I wish, like, the Obama administration would use this strong terminology when it came to groups like ISIS. But our own MK here, Tzipi Livni, is trying to turn the country against a specific population living in Judea and Samaria because of their geographical location. I mean, this is bigotry here. This is bigotry against a certain... We've seen it before. We see it all the time. Haaretz does it daily, nearly daily, against a certain group, certain population here. But here you have Tzipi Livni, a member of the Knesset, doing that same thing. She's calling for a referendum now to determine which direction the country is heading in. The decision of whether to work toward a two-state solution or a single nation should be a national one in order to take back our democratic Jewish Israel. And Seth Franzman, I saw on Twitter, posted, with a referendum, you know, what is she going to do then if the country votes against a two-state solution? What is she going to do then? What other tactic is she going to use? So shout out to Seth from the J Post op-ed editor pointing that out on Twitter the other day. What's she going to do then? The article ends here. Due to Netanyahu's lack of action, according to Tzipi Livni, Israel is stuck in a daydream, moving aimlessly. You know what? I don't totally disagree with that, but I would do just the opposite from what she is suggesting. Instead of giving away Judea and Samaria, I would annex all of these areas, put them under Israeli control. So if we're stuck in a daydream, it's because we haven't done so far. Again, concluding, she says a referendum would determine whether Israel would move back to a Jewish democratic direction, in a Jewish democratic direction, or down the heavily Yesha-influenced Jewish non-democratic direction it is currently headed in. Again, just complete hatred here and bigotry against people she calls the heavily Yesha-influenced non-democratic direction. That's what she calls the current situation here, our government, etc., extremists, settlers, using all the terminology here. It makes me sick to hear this from one of our members of Knesset, but that's what she wants. And she's stigmatizing an entire population and making these falsehoods, false claims that we're somehow, you know, it sounds like the protocols of the elders of Zion, honestly. It sounds like the settlers are taking over. We have to be weary about the settlers. I mean, if this was a non-Jew talking like this, imagine the outrage expressed against a certain population of the Jewish community. Anyway, unfortunately, that's the case. Earlier, we talked about, and I mentioned I would get to it, the lone wolf terrorist phenomenon, which I don't believe in. And here, an article by Paul Sperry in the New York Post also says that this lone wolf terrorist business is a myth, saying that referring to those attacks in Orlando and in San Bernardino and all these other attacks in the United States. He's saying these were not lone wolf attacks. It wasn't just one guy who woke up in the morning decided he was going to massacre people. There were influences there. So you got to check out this article. I'm not going to read the whole thing here in the New York Post. How he points out how President Obama says, "Don't worry, the Orlando terrorist was just another lone actor operating in isolation, unconnected to any larger group of supporters." In fact, he says these so-called lone wolves are running in packs, and suggesting otherwise gives the public a false sense of security. In other words, don't claim that these are lone wolves. Don't claim that there's nothing to worry about. It's just one crazy guy. Sperry argues that this is actually either something that these people are learning at home from their families, from their parents, or from the internet, or from their local mosques, or, you know, if they're garnering support from foreign terror organizations. These are, in some cases, as was the case in Orlando, an American citizen who was influenced by his environment, by his surroundings, by his parents, by his mosque, and all these other things. The guy from Orlando, the terrorist here in Orlando, Omar Mateen, I mean, there were reports here that he celebrated, when he was 14 years old, the Twin Tower attacks on 9/11. So he had this in him from a long time ago. It wasn't something where he woke up one day and said he was going to attack a gay club in Florida. He had this being, just like here in Israel, these kids are brainwashed in the schools, in the mosques. It's part of their value system, unfortunately, under the Palestinian Authority and, of course, under Hamas. It's something they grow up with, and there are networks. So he says, stop with this lone wolf business. Stop trying to downplay that this is actually happening. This is actually a phenomenon that we, you know, go out. You have to say this is radical Islam, which the president went into a whole. You should check out Jeremy Gimpel's video, by the way, on YouTube, breaking down President Obama's response as to why he will not say the words radical Islam or blame radical Islam for the recent attacks in the U.S. Got to check out Jeremy Gimpel. You can Google it or YouTube it. Check out his video. Amazing. Just to conclude this article here, he says the president is desperately trying to disconnect the dots. But the hard truth is there's a much broader network of support for these so-called lone wolf terrorists within their Muslim families and the larger Muslim community than the public is being told. Same thing here in Israel. If there's anyone out there who thinks we're confused about who our enemies are, Obama lectured Americans last week in a post-Orlando speech that would come as a surprise to the thousands of terrorists we've taken. He said the following, Obama, that would come as a surprise to the thousands of terrorists who we've taken off the battlefield. What he still doesn't get is the enemies aren't just terrorists overseas, but terrorists at home, says Sperry, along with their friends and relatives. And the battlefield is in our own communities. Until we grasp that shocking reality, we won't be able to stop this cancer from spreading deeper into our own backyards. It's not just somewhere in the Middle East or way out and who knows where. He's saying that Americans should be worried because the battlefield is in places like Orlando, San Bernardino, etc. And as long as you keep ignoring it over there, and I hope we're not ignoring it here in Israel, then it's going to continue. And enough calling these attacks simply lone wolves or desperate, angry, mentally ill individuals. These are Islamic-inspired extreme jihadists who are carrying out these attacks time and time again. Just one more article here before we have to leave you for today. Times of Israel reports, to Israel's dismay, the European Union ministers are going to meet this week and talk about backing the French peace push. Remember, the French held a conference just several weeks ago where they did not even include the Israelis and the so-called Palestinians in their conference. They are basically getting together and trying to dictate terms of what they believe a Middle East peace would look like, specifically regarding Israel and her neighbors. When I mean neighbors, I'm talking about immediate neighbors here, the Arabs living in Judea and Samaria. So the European Union's foreign ministers were to meet Monday to vote, and that's today, in support of the French peace initiative proclamation expected to bolster Paris's efforts to kickstart Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. It's not really kickstarting. It's basically dictating terms without negotiations. So number one, this shows that, you know, the Palestinians so-called get what they want without direct negotiations. Israel's position is, official position is, no, we believe in direct negotiations. I mean, I'm honestly against talking to them. We saw from the start of the show, the mother who celebrated her son being a jihadist murderer, killing two Israelis. These are the people you want to talk to. So I'm personally against talking to them about anything. I mean, these are terrorists. I think the Palestinian Authority should be sent packing. That's my opinion. But this shows you, more importantly than the fact that the Arabs will get what they want if they don't come to negotiations under this plan, this shows you that terrorists and terror works. okay? You carry out terror attacks. We've seen over the last 9 months here in Israel, the stabbings and the shootings, etc. You don't come to negotiations. You carry out these attacks. And what do you get? You get a French peace push to try to create a Palestinian state. In other words, they're being rewarded. Those who carry out the terror and their supporters and their leaders, they're being rewarded for carrying out terror. That's the message I think it sends, that the European Union ministers are considering supporting it. The French are supporting it. Maybe the U.S. will get on board eventually. The message is terror pays. That is the ultimate message being sent to the jihadists when you support these type of conferences. Terror pays. You get what you want. You carry out attacks, and we'll give you what you want. You don't carry out attacks. You carry out attacks. Either way, no matter what it is, don't negotiate. We're going to give you what you want. Ultimately, it sends that message. Terror pays. We're going to keep doing it because it works. We're getting what we want because we're carrying out these attacks. That is the message the world, the European Union, in this case, the French certainly, are sending to Mahmoud Abbas and all those on the other side in Ramallah who continue to incite on a day-to-day basis against, they won't call us the Jewish state of Israel, but that is who we are. We are here to stay. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us here today. We are out of time as I gaze over the beautiful Judean hills, broadcasting from Gush Etzion, from the hub. Come check it out here, the hub here in the Gush Etzion Industrial Zone, where people come together, Israel, the startup nation, building companies and businesses and startups and all the wonderful things going on here that you hear about in regard to startup nation. It's happening here in Judea and Samaria as well, folks. It's happening here in Gush Etzion. It's an honor to be broadcasting today from the hub. Big shout out to my main man, Binyamin Breski, engineer extraordinaire. Without him, there's no sound. This does not get to you, dear listener. My name is Josh Haston, broadcasting from Gush Etzion. This is Israel Uncensored on thelandofisrael.com. Be in touch with me on Twitter at Jew of Zion via email. I love your emails. Happy to read them on the air. Josh@thelandofisrael.com. That's Josh@thelandofisrael.com. Of course, on Facebook, it's Josh Haston, Haston. Signing out from Israel. Most importantly, from now until next week when we speak again, be safe. All the best from Israel.
The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of our nation in all its aspects. To revive the land for the nation, to revive Judaism in our hearts, and to revive our hearts for Judaism. The Land of Israel Network brought to you by Mizrahi Olami. That's the Mizrahi World Movement.
Do you like picking strawberries or blueberries in the spring and summer? What about grapes? If you were to take an experience like picking grapes and move it to the heartland of Israel, this is when an experience becomes prophetic. Young and old, singles and families are all invited on this adventure of a lifetime. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to join us on the mountains of Israel, where prophecy meets reality. Go to hayuvel.com, that's HAYOVEL.com, for more information.